Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer. We're coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center deep in the Civil Defense Radio Bunker Complex. And this week, we are speaking with John Truman Wolf. Mr. Wolf is the editor and publisher of the Strategic Financial Intelligence, a monthly newsletter dealing with investing, politics, and the economy. It's found at strategicfinancialintelligence.com. He's a regular talk show host in the Los Angeles area, and he has a master's degree with honors from San Jose State University and is the former chairman of the Department of History at John F. Kennedy University. Mr. Wolf has many number one best-selling books and international awards, and two of his books are The Coming Financial Crisis, A Look Behind the Wizard's Curtain, and the other one is The 99 Strongest Banks in America. So help me welcome Mr. Wolf to Civil Defense Radio. Hello, Mr. Wolf.
Preston, hi. Thanks for having me on. Nice to be with you.
It's my pleasure. I read your book, The Coming Financial Crisis, A Look Behind the Wizard's Curtain, a few years ago, and it really helped me out understanding some of the things that had gone on before, you know, back in 2008 and all the financial crisis that we had there. But when I introduced you, did I leave anything out by chance?
No, that's fine. Those are background highlights, and that's good coverage.
Okay. Well, there's a number of things that I wanted to cover today. You know, I introduced your book, and I've talked about it, that I liked it, and I even have it on my list of books that I recommend to people. I've posted that on our social media sites previously. But can you give us an overview of this book, The Coming Financial Collapse, A Look Behind the Wizard's Curtain?
Well, Preston, the primary thrust of that book was to expose the work, I'm not sure work is the right verb, but the activities of the Bank for International Settlements and their part in the global financial crisis of 2008. Most people have never heard of the Bank for International Settlements, referred to as the BIS. It's in Basel, Switzerland. I refer to it as the godfather of the global financial mafia. It is the central banker's central bank. So 55 of the central banks around the world are clients there, are members there. You know, everyone from the U.S. Fed, the Bank of Canada, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of Italy, the central banks of the world. And I'm sure your listeners probably know the central banks essentially control the economies of their respective nations by creating, expanding or decreasing the money supply, manipulating interest rates, and so forth. So that book exposes the BIS, which I said is in Basel, Switzerland. Interestingly, despite the fact that they're in Switzerland, Swiss law does not affect it. Its employees are immune from prosecution. They have their own law enforcement or militia on the property. This is a little nation essentially above the law. And it is behind much of what goes on globally in the finance world. So the book exposes that bank and explains how it was involved in the global financial crisis of 2008. There are some other chapters. I updated the book in 2016. I wrote it a little bit earlier than that, but then added a couple of chapters to bring it kind of up to date. So, and there are recommendations in the book on what to do financially and so forth. But that's a very quick overview of the book.
Okay. Yeah, I have the 2016 edition here. I have the new one.
The latest, cool.
Yeah. So those guys, they got their own militia and they're a nation all to themselves. It sounds like they are the true power brokers of world economies.
Well, they are. They are. I mean, they have their own, it's a little bit like the comparison here isn't maybe not the best, but it's similar to the Vatican in that it's like a country in and of itself that isn't controlled by other governments or whatever. Except this is a bank. It's not the headquarters of a global religion. It's a bank. And that's right. I mean, they have the central bankers fly in there periodically and have meetings and get their marching orders and go back out and implement them.
Yeah, it's one of those things that most people would only see something like that in a James Bond movie or something like that, you know, some fantasy movie. But we don't deal with conspiracy theories here on Civil Defense Radio. We talk about conspiracies and we talk about them as real fact. And this, the existence of this BIS is a real fact, as well as other portions that we're going to be talking about that that make up some of the dealings that the BIS has. But before we get to that, can we have a general update on the U.S. economy and where we sit with our debt and what kind of threat that is to us as a nation? Because that's what a lot of people are worried about. And we almost had a crash with this COVID thing. You know, if it wasn't for Wuhan, we'd be steaming along in very high territory as far as the markets go.
Well, we would indeed. As the president likes to say, which is the truth, I mean, the economy was, you know, hot as a firecracker. I mean, unemployment was at record lows. This was true generally and for various ethnic groups. And, it was moving. I mean, and the basic positive economic actions had been taken, taxes had been cut, regulations had been pruned back, and entrepreneurs were encouraged to, you know, get on with it. And then we've had these last 8 or 9 months, which have been a touch of insanity, but which we could talk about. But currently now, a solution, at least in terms of the economy, has been to get money out to the public. And I don't know that anything different would have been called for. But from the viewpoint of the question that you asked, there's an additional $3 trillion in debt. And the Fed's been pumping it out, and they've been doing that in coordination with the U.S. Treasury. My concern about that, I mean, there are various problems with that, but one of which is that inflation will be coming. For your listeners that kind of don't stick their nose into such things, inflation is defined as the amount of money in circulation in comparison to the goods and services that are available. So you know, if you and I are sitting in a room of 20 people and everybody's got 10 bucks in their pocket and I'm at the front of the room and I've got an orange to sell, the orange will go for 10 bucks likely. But if all of those people have got 100 bucks in their pocket, that money will bid for the orange and the price of the orange will go up. So what we've experienced in the last few months has been the injection of trillions of dollars into the economy, and the production, the GDP of the United States has gone down. So one of my concerns is that we're going to be looking at some serious inflation next year. That said, you know, if you believe the news, and I don't believe most of it, but some of it, you know, I mean, there does seem to be a rebound. More people are back to work. The employment, unemployment rate is going down. You know, some of these states continue to lock down their, you know, their businesses. I happen to live in the Republic of California, you know, and our governor is just a little to the left of Mao Zedong.
just a bit.
But, you know, some states are wide open. Florida's doing well and so forth and so on. So, I mean, all things considered, given the insanity of some of these government shutdowns, I mean, I think we're doing okay. And I think the graphs are up. And I think we'll, you know, hopefully be out of this noise by the end of the year. But I am concerned about inflation for next year. That's my main thing. And as you mentioned, you know, we're $3 trillion. A trillion, you know, these words get thrown out. $1 trillion is a lot of money.
Oh yeah.
And we are, you know, $3 trillion more in debt today than we were, you know, beginning of the year. So it's not healthy economically.
Yeah, it's also becoming a football between the two political parties, who one who doesn't want the president to have any success, and people getting money just before the election and probably Christmas. But it's unfortunate that it's happening like this.
It is indeed.
So we've got a lot of threats to our economy, and they're foreign and domestic. And you mentioned in your, I think it was in your book or in an article, I can't remember now, that there was a coup taking place, a coup d'etat in the financial world. So can you give us a little about that, and then we'll move on to the international?
I have used that term, and I'm not sure exactly the article or page you're referring to, but I mean, there's a couple that of course come to mind. One, there's the obvious one that we have seen develop and is still developing in terms of U.S. government intelligence and law enforcement seeking to remove the president, the duly elected president. You know, this information seems to kind of leak out as people with some integrity and confront issue it. As your listeners, I'm sure are aware, the last couple of weeks have been involved in the Biden, as Trump calls them, or somebody calls them, the Biden crime family. But these emails from Hunter Biden are jaw-dropping. Then you go, well, the U.S. Justice Department, the FBI, had that laptop for some time. Why is it just coming out? That question, I don't think, has been answered. But clearly, if you go back to, you know, a year ago, as the real truth began rolling out, there's definitely a coup, no question, a coup to remove the president. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was, you have to be blind not to see that. In terms of a financial coup, that's a subject that I have just written about in my newsletter, and I'm going to continue to do so. And that is, Preston, the dramatic increase in the rollout of CBDCs, central bank digital currencies. Mm. The Bank for International Settlements did a survey at the end of last year and found that 80% of the central banks in the world were in the process of either testing, piloting, or in some cases implementing central bank digital currencies. That means, and your listeners may or may not be aware, there is definitely a war on cash on this planet and an effort to get rid of cash. And these central banks are seeking to replace the cash in your bank account with zeros and ones. Those are called central bank digital currencies. The money is moving digital. There are the decentralized digital currencies or cryptocurrencies. That's the Bitcoin and its progeny. Those are decentralized. Nobody's controlling those.
But they are being centralized.
I'm sorry, say again?
They are being manipulated.
Yes, they're being manipulated. Yes, they are. But then there are the centralized digital currencies. These are digital currencies from central banks. And in the issue of Strategic Financial Intelligence that we just published a few days ago, I detail what central banks around the world are doing in terms of implementing digital currencies into the banking system. China, you talked about, which is a major, competitor is the nicest word, is leading the planet in terms of industrialized nations. They have four cities that are operating on digital currencies, Preston. People are being paid with digital currencies. People are stores are accepting them, and they are looking to roll this out big time. The governor of the PBOC, the People's Bank of China, the central bank there, when asked at a press conference when they were going to go full tilt, he said, "Well, we're looking at the Beijing Olympics in 2022." So this is moving. The U.S. Fed, which would be of most interest, presumably to your listeners, had been kind of sitting on its, whatever, just being quiet. They've been rather conservative about it.
Right.
And then a couple of weeks ago, they announced a study between the Boston Fed and MIT to, research how to roll out digital currencies. And then, surprisingly, the president of the Cleveland Fed, there are, for your listeners that may not be aware, there are 12 central banks in the Federal Reserve System, New York being the big one. But the president of the Cleveland Fed, a woman whose name escapes me right this minute, but she gave a speech. And in that speech, she talked about, and this is a public speech to Chamber of Commerce or some group like that, the implementation of bank account, Americans banking with their central bank, and the central bank would be putting digital currencies in their accounts. Now, let me repeat that. She talked about entirely bypassing the U.S. banking system so that, you and I don't have our bank accounts in the bank of whatever. It's with the central bank, and the central bank then can control the zeros and ones in your bank account. You go into the store to buy a six pack of beer. I'm not a beer drinker, but a lot of Americans are. And you give the clerk your ATM card, and something comes back and it goes, "No, we reject this charge. You've bought too many six packs this month. Sorry, you can't buy any more." That's, on the one hand, a silly little example. On the other hand, a very real prospect, because central banks will be able to control, monitor your spending, which makes a doormat out of the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
In some cases, control behavior. So that is a, it's probably not the coup that you're referring to that I wrote about, but that's a coup in the making as we speak, the central banks all over the world are moving very, very rapidly in this direction. There was a article I just read last night quoting the chairman of the Central Bank of Sweden telling their parliament, we're switching to an e-krona, digital currency in Sweden, just wiping out cash. So that's something for your folks to be aware of. We can talk about what you do about that, but that's at least one answer to your question.
Well, that we're getting closer to the biblical one world currency, aren't we?
We are indeed, and that is the intention.
Yeah, I thought the SDRs were going to be that world currency, but it sounds like. Well, I guess that is the SDR, what they're talking about, isn't it? The strategic, what is it? I can't think of what it's called now. SDR is short for
Special Drawing Rights.
Special Drawing Rights, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's, in my opinion, that is the end game. That is the goal that is, you know, and if the central banks are all rolling out digital currencies, the IMF can then basically label them SDRs and have it be the currency of the IMF. This is not, it's important, and you made a point at the beginning of the show. This isn't some kind of wild conspiracy, folks. These digital currencies are rolling out. The International Monetary Fund has not hidden its intention in this regard. So it's something we need to be aware of and plan for.
So the twin sisters of the apocalypse, as you've called them, the IMF and the World Bank, are all part of this global empire, financial empire that is looking to, or actually probably does, in large part, control the world.
Well, that's exactly right. Those two entities, the IMF and the World Bank, were children of the Bretton Woods Conference. Towards the end of the Second World War, there was a financial conference in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire. It was all the allies were there, and it was designed to restructure the global financial scene. The U.S. came out of there as the U.S. dollar came out as the major currency on the planet. But in addition, those two entities were a result of that conference, the World Bank and the IMF. And originally their goals and purposes were quite sane and ethical and survival. You know, the World Bank was to provide loans for war-torn Europe, and the IMF was to kind of keep currencies in balance, but they have become predators. The product of the World Bank, Preston, the product of that institution is indebted nations. That's what they create.
Yeah. And that's how they take down empires that resist their rule, isn't it? By sinking their currency. And George Soros is one of the guys who helps do that.
Well, Soros is definitely one of the henchmen. I give examples, perhaps I did in the coming financial crisis. I don't even remember, but I've written about it at some length. What you're referring to is they send people in like Soros, and he short sells the currency, the national currency. A short sell means he sells it, and it floods the market with the currency. The value of the currency goes down. The economy suffers, and then the IMF and the World Bank come in and go to the premier or president. Gee, is there a problem? You know, would 5 or 10 billion help? Those documents get signed, and what those documents say would stand the hair up on the back of your neck. I've read them, and it gives those global financial elite control of the country's tax policy, the agricultural policy, the family planning of young women. It's ugly stuff. And Soros, to repeat, is one of their henchmen. This is a bad dude, very bad guy.
Yeah, he's not real high on my list of characters, that's for sure. So, you know, we talked about our debt already, but we also have international competitors out there that are, you said competitor, I think, China is a force to be reckoned with. They are a competitor of ours economically, technologically, as far as financially, they are, even though they own a large portion of our debt, or the largest portion of our debt outside of the, you know, the Fed, I guess, or however it works. But they could sink us if they decided to sell all those dollars or that debt that they owe or that they own, and we would be hard pressed to do anything about it.
Well, you know, it is a bipolar world now, meaning the U.S. and China. When I first published the book, a friend of mine in Taiwan, the book meaning the coming financial crisis, actually had a different name to it early on, but a friend of mine in Taiwan sent the book to some people in Beijing. And then she sent me an email and she said, you know, the Chinese government would like to talk to you about solutions in the book. I thought it was a joke, you know. I said, have them fly me over business class and put me up in this particular hotel, which I knew the hotel. And she sent me an email back on, they'll fly you however you want. They'll put you up wherever you want. And so I flew to the Chinese government, the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. Flew me to Beijing. I spent about a week there with some, reasonably high-profile people discussing some solutions to the global financial crisis. And among other things, and you mentioned, you know, that they own a lot of our debt. They own, here's an anomaly. The major communist nation on planet Earth, the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, or the People's Republic of China, has got $3 trillion in reserves. Here's America, the bastion of free enterprise. We're $27 trillion in debt.
Yeah, how's that work?
Which is a product of international bankers, which we could talk about. But of China's $3 trillion in reserves, $1 trillion is U.S. T-bills, is what you were talking about, or government debt, T-bills, T-notes, or T-bonds. Uh-huh. And among other things, I had dinner with the president of China Gold, the largest gold mining consortium, 60% government-owned. This guy's got 40,000 employees. And China's the biggest gold producer in the world. And he's buying up gold mines around the planet like Pac-Man. So they're very gold-focused. They are looking to back the yuan with gold and make it the strongest currency on the planet. So there's economic warfare besides the other kinds of warfare, various kinds of cyber warfare, et cetera.
Yeah.
There is economic warfare in terms of who has the most gold, et cetera. I think it was two months ago, I wrote one of my, issue of the Strategic Financial Intelligence examines this conflict between the U.S. dollar and the yuan or the renminbi. The Chinese currency has two names, the yuan and the other one is the RMB, which stands for renminbi. It's an economic struggle, and ownership of gold is part of that.
Okay. Now we're getting short of time, but what can Americans do in just the next 3-4 minutes? Can you give us an idea of what Americans can do to prepare for the financial troubles and the inflation that's coming?
Well, very importantly, Preston, I would encourage your listeners to acquire precious metals. I'm a bigger fan of silver than gold, but so either one, silver and gold. There are, you know, there are bullion dealers, you know, all over the country. And wherever they happen to be, they can, you know, check their Google or whatever. So I would buy silver eagles. The U.S. bullion coins are called eagles. You can buy gold eagles as well. The reason I'm a fan of silver is if the you know what hits the fan, you're much better off having a 30. You know, you could buy a silver eagle today for probably around $30. You know, having a silver eagle go put gas in your car or buy groceries as opposed to a gold eagle, which is today probably around $2,000. So that's one thing that I think is very, very important. I think people, and this may be an anathema to some of your listeners, but I think it's important. People should get some familiarity with the cryptocurrency world because it's coming. It's no longer some kind of bizarre whatever. Bitcoin and its progeny are here to stay. I encourage folks just to stick your toe in that water if you're not a holder of some kind of digital currency. I'm a big fan of Ethereum, which is the number two currency in the world. You know, you can open up an account and buy a little bit. You don't have to spend a lot of money. You know, you can buy, I mean, Bitcoin today is selling for a Bitcoin is, I think, $11,800. But you can take $100 or $200 or something and just buy a little piece. So you don't have to have a big chunk of money. So I think it's important that folks own precious metals. I think it's wise to get some familiarity with the digital currency world and particularly the decentralized digital currencies, meaning the digital currencies that aren't controlled by governments like Bitcoin and Ethereum, because this has become part of the economy now and people need to understand it. So I encourage that. To sound a little conspiratorial, I'd take some cash out of the bank, stick it under your mattress or something. I think there'll be a black market in cash. Cash is going away, and that's something I do. So those are, you know, some initial steps that I would take.
For this coming period of time between the election and the end of the year, I would recommend having a good amount of cash just in case, because there may be a lot of rioting and other violent activity out there where you may not want to go to the bank, or the banks may be closed because of the activities that are going on in the streets. So I would suggest having some cash, a good amount of cash that you can use to pay your bills, to do other things. It's wise to have cash, and I agree. Silver is a lot more affordable, especially right now. It's gone up. It was like $15-16 an ounce, but now it's over 20, and so I think it's around 23-24 last time I looked. So it's going up, and I suspect it'll probably even go up higher. So I'll second your recommendations there. And any last minute information for the our friends out there who may want to get a hold of you or your newsletter?
Well, yes, thanks. And I agree with everything you've said. I think there's a bull market in precious metals coming. Silver is at around $24. And I would encourage your listeners to subscribe to my newsletter. One, of course, I want subscribers, but two, it's important to me to educate folks. So, which I do on these issues, and they can follow what's going on with digital currencies, with precious metals, with, you know, these central banks and what they're doing. And as you said at the top of the show, we're at strategicfinancialintelligence.com. you know, sign up, get the newsletter. I think your listeners will find the information useful and valuable. That's my intention in writing it, and hopefully I get that product.
Great. And that'll have to be the last word. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we highly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. And our new channel on YouTube, which is Civil Defense Radio Podcast. And you'll be able to find us on a few other platforms here real soon. So I wish to thank Mr. Wolf for being our guest today. And again, I'd like to thank you, our friends out there who are listening to us on a regular basis all around the world. We have quite an international following now. I really appreciate you guys being with us. So please be safe. Be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.